Raf.
James.
What are you doing to build your dreams?
Well, I just bought a combustion engine car, so that's obviously not part of it. I think I'd like to raise the height of one side of our fence.
Raise the height of your fence? By how much?
Well, just maybe a meter. There are council legislations around how high a fence can go, but we're on a corner block, and I just like slightly more privacy.
If someone's walking past your house, are they getting full view into your backyard?
No, they can't see in, but because as I've discussed ad nauseum, we did some landscaping. Part of that ended up raising our backyard. So we're significantly higher. We're on the top of a hill, but we're significantly higher than the street.
Right.
And so like when I'm walking, for example, to my shed, mm-hmm. again, I believe we've spoken about the shed a fair bit.
Uh-huh.
It's a big thing. They would see a kind of floating torso a couple of meters above them.
Wow.
I mean, they'd see my head as well, I suppose. But
so now you want like a fortress-style battlements?
No, I mean, we've got jasmine growing across the fence, quite nice. But like, I feel a little exposed because I also walk around topless a lot.
In your own backyard?
Yeah. So as I have a right to.
Absolutely. That's the Australian dream. The Australian dream is to own a quarter acre block and not wear a shirt on it. So you're walking from the house to your golf simulator in the shed.
Correct.
You're not wearing a shirt.
Often, yes.
Curious.
BYD, favorite car company.
Cars. We talked about cars a couple of weeks ago on our premium episode. We talked about Apple abandoning its car project. But in passing, we mentioned BYD, which is the Chinese electric vehicle manufacturer that's been making waves for a little while now.
Well, they have sold more EVs than any other company over the last minimum 6 months, possibly a year.
Possibly more.
They sell more EVs than Tesla. Yes, that's right. You heard that right, folks. They've sold more EVs than Tesla.
Yeah. And a few people in the listenership were curious about BYD and wanted us to talk a little bit more about that than we did a couple of weeks ago. So we thought it's a good time to dip our toe back into the world of cars, talk about BYD and a few other things that are going on.
What's the deal with EVs? What's going on with
vehicles?
EVs?
Like a car that's powered entirely by a battery.
No, well, actually the interesting thing is...
I wouldn't have thought of it.
Well, you can do it, mate.
Wow.
It's possible.
Crazy.
The interesting thing, and this is a bit of foreshadowing, just so you know what's happening in the rest of the episode, is EVs, the demand has dropped significantly. Why? We'll get into that later on down round.
BYD, biggest EV company in the world, something that Elon Musk kind of scoffed at when they first got into the EV game in the late 2000s, early 2010s. Sort of laughed at them and basically said, have you seen their car? It looks like shit.
Mm.
And these days, I think Elon Musk and Tesla are significantly more concerned about what BYD are up to.
Yeah,
and if you're in America, you're probably like, I've never seen a BYD car in my goddamn life.
Mm. If you're in Sydney, you will have seen a few.
Yeah, you will have seen. Yeah. If you haven't been keeping an eye out, if you're not a car person, sorry, I'm not a car person either, have a look out because you will see BYD cars quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because the main reason being is that they are actually a more affordable electric car than most of what's on the market right now.
That's pretty good. That's ostensibly
good. Then it's also it's a decent car. But, all right, well, we'll start kind of at the beginning just so we'll give you a sense of BYD itself.
Mm.
So company was founded in 1996. So it's been around for quite a while.
Yeah, by a chemist.
Yep. Started by a chemist as a battery company, not as a vehicle or an automotive company. And this is the thing that we'll get into a little bit more as we go on, which is the fact that if you want to be an electric vehicle company, like whether you're Tesla or you're a legacy vehicle maker or a new entrant or whatever, what you really need to figure out is batteries.
Yep.
Like, how are you going to make them? How are you going to separate yourself from the rest of the pack?
Yeah.
Because when it comes down to it, an electric vehicle, is actually not a super complex machine.
Yeah, it's actually far simpler than a combustion engine.
A combustion engine car has a lot of...
you've got constant explosions.
You've got little explosions happening inside your vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, that's a crazy thing for humanity to have harnessed, fucking Prometheus or whatever.
Yeah, literally, you know, you have small explosions constantly happening to pump pistons up and down.
Exactly.
You know, fundamentally, that's how it works.
That's how it works. Whereas an electric vehicle is a battery and four wheels.
Yeah.
And the
battery make wheels go around.
And the battery makes the wheels turn around. Obviously, there's a few other things going on. But as a result, whereas a combustion engine has lots of tiny little components that are very sophisticated and they all have to work in concert and many, many things can go wrong.
And often do
in cars. Electric vehicles and EVs are way simpler. The one big component that matters is the battery.
Yeah. And that can cost typically, you know, that, well, as a baseline, you know, it will cost the manufacturer anywhere between $5,000 and $25,000 minimum, you know, for the battery. On a lot of cars, it can cost like half the value of the car is the battery.
The reason that EVs are more expensive than traditional combustion vehicles is literally because of the battery. So as a result, BYD, now obviously basically the biggest EV company in the world, is started as a battery company.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense.
And in about the time I was graduating from high school to university, you probably would have just been in high school. You're a bit younger than me, a bit older than me.
I was in preschool, mate. I was learning the fucking alphabet.
In 2008, when they had this idea, we're going to make cars, Berkshire Hathaway, that's right, Warren Buffett, and Charlie Munger, may he rest in peace.
Mm-hmm. The big bless up.
Mung dog.
Rest in power.
Rest in power, Mung dog. We allowed to say that? in 2008, made a huge investment into BYD, seeing the potential there.
Yep.
And from there, I think it was all the way up for BYD.
Because they acquired a Chinese state-owned automobile company, basically, to get the capacity to do it. And they do build... petrol cars, or they have in the past built standard petrol cars.
And hybrids as well.
And hybrids, and they still do hybrids. But yeah, but it is interesting that the big automotive companies of the world, particularly, the European and the American ones, have very, very long histories that basically stretch back to the beginning of automobiles.
Yeah.
You know, your early innovators, many of them in Europe and America, the process was streamlined by companies like Ford.
Further streamlined by Toyota.
Well, that's it. Yeah, they sort of built cars in Europe and the US for many, many years. The process was completely radicalized by the Toyota production system.
And this is also quite interesting, I should say. Like, this happens with a lot of businesses where you have the Ford manufacturing process, even though we talk about a production line, it was still, realistically, it was a bunch of highly specialized people producing manufacturing a lot of the engine themselves. It wasn't just like, my job is to put one screw on. It was still like, it was more artisan. And part of the Toyota process was like getting every single individual unique part of manufacturing a combustion engine down to just like a highly specialized like single thing, which also made the people making it or the people in that were highly replaceable. But that realistically, that's one of the big innovations, as well as, you know, end-to-end oversight of like every single nut and bolt and, you know, inventory management, blah, 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 blah. But breaking down that manufacturing process, and I only bring that up because BYD's big innovation was the same thing in the battery space. They really broke down every element of manufacturing a battery to every single, as small as you can go, unit.
Yes. So the BYD expertise, as said, they started as a battery company and they produced a lot of the early sort of lithium ion phone batteries. So if you had like a Nokia phone back in the early mid-2000s, there's a really good chance it had a BYD battery in it.
Well, the story goes that the founder of BYD's on-again, off-again wife went to the headquarters of Motorola unannounced and knocked on the door and was just like, give me a meeting, give me a meeting, give me a meeting, and was there for a week. And after a week, when they finally did have a meeting, they're like, oh, these guys do seem to be making pretty decent batteries. And every Motorola from then on started using a BYD battery.
Yeah.
Hustle culture. See, people they criticize the grind set, but
it's great, mate. Just put on a nice crisp shirt, a tie, walk in, have a firm handshake, and you can get a job at the EB Games at Miranda Fair, Westfield. Just put your mind to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically the world they came from. But coming back to my earlier point, all these companies that have come up from the world of automobiles, you know, we're talking about everyone from your Fords through to even your Toyotas, certainly European manufacturers, be they like your Volkswagens or your Audis, all the way up to your Lamborghinis or whatever, they have this long tradition in building high-performance internal combustion engines. But this new era kind of calls for a different skill set. And this is sort of the concrete wall they've all been slamming into.
Yeah.
Is like figuring out batteries.
Yeah, and like the two major components of a car nowadays, especially an EV, is like your battery and your infotainment unit. So it's like batteries and software.
Yeah.
Which, you know, a Ford or a Mercedes-Benz, as you say, for the last 100 years, they've been focusing on basically making the combustion engine as efficient and quiet and amazing as possible. And fast as possible. It is a totally different skill set in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've still got interiors and stuff, but come on, who can't fucking put a couple of chairs down, put some leather on it?
You know? I'd do a bit of upholstery. You know, there's guys in the neighborhood who can do upholstery.
Exactly.
We mentioned this in the premium episode a couple of weeks ago, which is that was really the bet that Elon Musk made, even above the battery issue, which was the future of cars is going to be software.
Mm.
And like having the best software is going to be really, really key to owning it. And this is one of the reasons that Apple thought they would have had a great shot at making a car. A, because they would have the machine learning expertise to handle self-driving. That didn't work out in the end. But also, as is evidenced by the fact that Apple CarPlay has taken off and has pissed off and sort of infuriated and confused legacy car makers, that the average consumer, shock horror, prefers the CarPlay experience to the inbuilt entertainment systems on cars. But this was basically the bet that Elon Musk made. And then on top of that, they've built up their own sort of battery expertise. They partner with Panasonic, famously, that Tesla's batteries are largely produced by Panasonic in Japan. But BYD obviously came from the status of, we already know the battery stuff. We've been building them forever for all different sorts of use cases, be they consumer or industrial or whatever. So when the electric car revolution started to raise its head a bit, BYD was like, oh, sick. We can do this.
We just got to put a box on top of the battery.
We've bought the car company. We sort of know the rest of it. And now we need like the thing that is at the core of these things, we already know how to do. So they're very vertically integrated.
Mm.
That's the thing about BYD that everyone always brings up as kind of like, A, this is what's remarkable about this company, and B, this is what's so remarkable about like a lot of Chinese firms in general.
Yeah, yeah.
Like BYD owns lithium mines.
Yeah.
Like they own and build the ships that the BYD cars are shipped globally on.
Mm.
They own the whole production line from end to end, resource to car.
Yeah, and you buy directly from BYD, which is what Tesla kind of started, but you don't go through, which is a big crisis in the kind of car community or whatever, is car dealerships.
Yeah.
That car dealers are actually like up in arms about the Teslas and the BYDs because they feel like they have a special spot. And they get mad at like, because obviously places like Mercedes-Benz and BMW are like experimenting and dipping their toes in the water with, maybe you can just buy your Mercedes online. You know, maybe you can customize it yourself and we'll send it to you. And there's big court cases around dealerships being like, no, you're not allowed to do that. You're supposed to go through us so we get our commission. And you hear like this opining as well, occasionally be like, no one wants to just buy it online or just like showing like, oh, see, this one showed up in the paint job. We would never have sold it like that. You need to be coming down to a car dealership.
This is the great big secret, certainly about America. It's definitely true in Australia to a certain extent and other countries. But like some of the richest people in the US, if cut out like the real top level of rich people,
yeah,
like cut out your Bill Gates, your Warren Buffetts, your tech billionaires, your startup billionaires, whatever. Just look at like people who have a net worth of like $50 to $100 million.
Yeah,
car dealers are just outrageously overrepresented.
Yeah,
they are like some of the richest people in America,
mm.
And they make money from not only selling cars but also the servicing.
The
ongoing servicing for a car is absolute.
Yeah, financing.
The financing.
But again, they're not actually financing themselves. They're just.
They're just
taking commission on.
They're taking commission for like,
which is basically the job, right?
The whole job is being a middleman.
Yeah.
And I get served on TikTok all the fucking time. It's so funny. There's like a guy who's like an inspirational speaker for car dealerships in the US.
Yeah, right.
And he's like this bold, muscular dude. His name's Andy, I'm pretty sure. He's like relatively famous. He's got like a whole online content operation. Mm. But he wears these insanely tight stretch chinos and tight shirts. And he just posts videos of him talking to like these fucking Midwestern car dealers. And he's like, I'm putting a gun to your head. And I'm telling you, I'm going to kill your entire family unless you sell 30 cars this week. And he's like, would you be able to sell those cars? And they're all like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's like, so why do I need to put the gun to your head? Like that kind of
good
shit.
Good point.
It's a huge culture of these, but they're just middlemen.
Yeah,
whole thing has been like, hey, big man, don't you feel tough sitting in the cab of this fucking F-150 Raptor?
Yeah.
You should buy this $150,000 car on 20% monthly interest.
Like, I know you've got the most recent before this model.
You got the 2022, but the 2024, listen to the speakers on this bad boy. He cranks it up.
Yeah.
Doesn't this make you feel like a big man?
Sometimes you're coming home, you're feeling stressed, have a go at this, and then just the in-seat massager.
Yeah. But it is interesting that this is kind of an under-described part of the EV thing. Mm. Is it because they are fundamentally not car companies? Like Tesla is a tech company.
Yeah.
And they think like a tech company. Mm. And they think like we're direct to consumer. We want to be like Apple, where you go to Tesla.com.
Yeah.
And you do everything from this one site. And you don't have to talk to like a sweaty red-faced guy.
Yeah.
In the middle of the nowhere dealership.
Yeah.
So yeah. And then, but point being, BYD kind of represents that. But all of EVs are a bit like that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's probably a better model where you don't have to give part of your sales commission, because distribution nowadays and marketing is way easier. Like, you're not dealing with a person who's like, I would like to buy a family car. And I go to a dealership to check out all the options. People research online. So like the dealership model actually doesn't really make that much sense. It's basically like a mall, like a shopping mall, which again, doesn't make sense. Consumers can research online.
True. But also the caveat being that this might work well for Tesla, which has like a really culty, super brand forward sort of thing, but is it going to work for, I don't know, for Volvo? Like, I mean, the Polestar kind of, for example, has its own sort of vibe there, but
yeah.
I don't, a lot of these legacy car makers, I don't know if they can really escape the consumer preferences.
Yeah. I mean, look, Tesla and like BYD, they still have showrooms that you can kind of go in and check out the cars. They just own them and they only sell Teslas and BYDs. It's not like there's multiple competing cars
there.
Yeah. But regardless, I've said it multiple times, I think, on the podcast, but we do need to talk about where the name BYD, Build Your Dreams, came from.
Yes.
Because it is one of my favorite stories, which is that originally it was like literally just the street name that the battery company, their first battery factory was on. And then in order to be like the first booth at industry kind of conventions, one of the first names on the list of booths at conventions, they just did the equivalent of just putting like the Chinese version of like AAA at the front of their name. So it's just like AAA William Street is equivalent. And that when you turn that into like English, it was BYD with the characters, and they just like, Build Your Dreams.
Yeah, they just did a backronym of Build Your Dreams.
But apparently like internally they're like, this, and this was kind of in the late 2010s after the Buffett thing, it was bring your money is internally what they said. Because, just bring your money because you're about to make a lot. Yeah.
Although, like, I know some of the cars they've put out have the full Build Your Dreams like marquee on the back, which is a bit
crazy. It's crazy. that's what they first caught my eye, because I was just driving my car and was behind a car that said Build Your Dreams on the back. And I was like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Then I worked out, it's the BYD thing I'd vaguely heard about. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, no, it
just is. Seeing, build your dreams. Build what does that mean?
Yeah. It does separate from when cars, I mean, car marketing and car brand names are just like completely unique in the world, where they just like make up a word that has like a vibe that they like.
Yeah. It's usually made up words.
It's completely like made up shit that like just expresses a certain kind of feeling.
But even like BYD, so their cars are like Dolphin, Seal.
Yeah.
Then they've got like some ones with like letters and numbers and whatever, but like It's kind of funny to just be like, oh, yes, it's a seal.
Yeah.
It's the seal car.
So, yeah, the point of the matter is that BYD has come along. As I mentioned, they still make like hybrid cars, but electric cars are sort of the majority of their business. Mm. EVs are quite popular in China. Mm. They're growing really strongly. China's car culture is a little bit different to American car culture. Mm. Their cities are much denser. A lot of people live in apartment buildings. They don't have quite the same sort of like sprawled out suburban living.
That they also have invested heavily in public infrastructure, like public transport infrastructure.
Yeah, totally. And they haven't built their society around cars in the same way that, you know, the US or Australia has.
Mm.
But as with many things that have been going on in China over the past 10, 20 years, with the growth of the middle class and the upper class, signaling and luxury are big parts of the culture, in the same way that you know, iPhones are a huge part of signaling that you're doing really well in China, so have luxury vehicles and buying a car generally. So that's been going on there. The government has invested really strongly in not only building up the industry, so the manufacturing of companies like BYD, but also things like charging infrastructure.
The charging infrastructure in China is apparently absolutely fantastic, like world leading, as well as just like handing out money on per battery built and per EV built. Like they had a lot of incentives to literally just produce cars.
Very tight relationships between BYD and a lot of like state-owned Chinese automotive and manufacturing firms. So they've kind of got that wall of support behind them. As we mentioned at the head of the episode, you will not find a BYD car in the US. And there's a few reasons for that, but the main one is that it's not economical because the US government threw up really, really strong tariffs.
Yeah, 25% on Chinese vehicles.
Yeah, which was put in by Trump, but Joe Biden has maintained it.
Yeah, and there's like a proposal to raise those tariffs to 125%, which obviously makes it just like impossible for, you know, no one can compete if you've literally have to pay more than twice as much as what you would be selling it for anywhere else in the world. And if you buy a Tesla, if you buy something American made, it's $7,500 tax credit that's just for the person buying it. Plus there's a bunch of tax credits for like the manufacturer around batteries and whatnot. Yeah, like again, around producing batteries. Because at the moment, it seems like the gold rush is like produce batteries.
Yeah, that was part of the Inflation Reduction Act in the US, as they really piled on the incentives. It's industrial policy to try and make it so American EV manufacturers can thrive against, you know, the Chinese onslaught, basically.
It's
at least psychologically very much a replay of what happened when American manufacturers were caught on the back foot by companies like Toyota. And then later companies like Hyundai and things like
Honda,
that.
Honda. You know? The great American
That's American.
That's cars. A Harley Davidson.
What does a Japanese car sound like?
That was a Harley Davidson. This is a Japanese. Faster and cheaper.
That's a Mitsubishi.
Kawasaki.
Kawasaki to you.
Or a Yamaha.
Yamaha. Yep. Great. Wonderful point.
Thank you.
What does a Chinese EV sound like? No, it's like how the Polestar. I don't know if anyone's heard this, but you know the Polestar is the Volvo EV brand, which is also Chinese owned now.
Yeah, like it was Swedish, but yes, now Chinese. Yeah,
Volvo is owned by a Chinese company, but
via like three subsidiaries. But yes, so Volvo is effectively Chinese.
But the later, because electric vehicles don't naturally make a sound, so a lot of them design their sound.
Yeah, or even you can choose sounds.
You can choose the kind of sound that makes.
Like the electric Ford Mustang, for example, has got like a bunch of different sounds you can choose for the engine.
Because obviously you don't want a car that's completely silent for safety reasons or whatever. But there's a huge long description on the Polestar website of how they came to arrive at their particular sound, all the things they were trying to evoke or express with it. But if you've ever heard a Polestar pull up next to you at night when there's not a lot of like petrol engines going on around you, it has got to be one of the most evil sounding vehicles I've ever heard in my life. And this is not a critique, because I think it's kind of cool to have a car that just sounds evil. But it's got like a real like real fucked up cyberpunk vibes.
Well, that's kind of what they go for. Like a lot of the Teslas have that as well. Like it's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's fucked up. Anyway.
Sounds, car sounds. I mean, this is the thing. I'm sure there's someone out there who was dicking around with synths in their bedroom, and their mum was like, why can't you just study computer science? It's like, no, mum, go away. I'm making noises.
Yeah.
And now they're paid $1.5 million, and they get every single time anyone turns on a Tesla, they get a royalty for like...
Yeah, they get 85 cents or something. Yeah. That's it. That's it, folks. You know, we live in the future. Doing a nice evil-sounding square wave or whatever, that can be a very lucrative career path for you or your music success child.
But anyway, all is not well in the EV world. If we'd done this podcast kind of 2 years ago, I think we would have said like, oh, yeah, it seems like EVs are just, everything's going to be EV. Toyota's announced every single car that they're going to be selling in 2030 is an EV. Nissan jumped on board. Mercedes jumped on board. VW said the same thing. Actually, I actually don't think Toyota ever did. Sorry, I take that back. Toyota were one of the few who never committed to being all EV. But many, many, many of the major manufacturers were like, by 2030, all of our cars will be electric. Because at that time, EV market share, which was very little and still is very small, though was growing at such an astronomical rate, everyone thought that EVs were going to be every single car in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And plus all the fact that, you know, governments around the world were signaling, you know, for example, California have a law in place now about, I mean, who knows if it's actually going to be, if they're going to do it, but they want to stop selling combustion engine cars by, I think, 2030.
Mm. 2030 is like the big number.
2030 is, a lot of manufacturers, a lot of governments,
yeah,
especially state governments across the world are kind of like, that's when we're going to just...
No more.
No more selling internal combustion vehicles. But yeah, as you flagged, the demand for EVs seems to subside a little bit, certainly in the West.
Yeah, even in China. And again, we talk about BYD, which is the biggest seller of EVs in the world. 95% of their vehicles go to China. Their growth has dropped from 65% to 35% over the last year. So growth is slowing significantly.
Yeah, which is definitely interesting and probably plays into, for example, why Apple was like, we're just going to pull the plug on our project. And yeah, it's kind of, I mean, there's a few things that I think go into it. The number one being, obviously, it's a different economic environment. You know, the classic down round line about higher interest rates and people not going as crazy about things that they probably have to borrow money to buy.
Exactly. Like building a power plate, a gigafactory. I actually don't know the meaning behind that. It's kind of annoying. I thought it was just a Tesla thing, but apparently that's just what they're called. Like a battery plant is called a gigafactory. I don't like that.
No, it's a bit cringe to me.
It feels cringe to me, but maybe it's science. So shout outs to you if you're a scientist. Good work. Good learning.
Mm.
Hopefully it's replicable, your study. Because, you know. Anyway, yeah, a gigafactory is a huge capital expenditure. So that's an investment, right? Like you borrow a bunch of money to make a capital expenditure. It doesn't go, it's not an operating margin. Once you spend the money, you've spent the money and now it's going to reap the rewards. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to worry about it eating into your gross profits. So it's much easier to do capital expenditures when the money you borrow doesn't cost anything, when you don't have to pay very high interest on that money. So yes, definitely A, companies far less interested in like these huge capital expenditures to build out these gigafactories and whatnot. For one, sure. Two, the demand side. Like people talk about this adoption curve. When a paradigm shift happens and there's a new thing, you have the very first, like these innovators, then next is the early adopters, and then it starts to slowly get mainstreamed, right? Like over time. EVs, I think, were very much, they got the innovators and they got the early adopters, but then like as you get to the mainstream or whatever, they're not ready. Like that part of the adoption curve just isn't really ready EV right now.
Let's be honest, I was saying this before, but the main adopting class of electric vehicles has been essentially what the punchline has been since the fucking Nissan Leaf or whatever, which is like rich or upper middle class to wealthy progressive liberals who care about the environment.
Yeah.
And this is obviously something that especially people like Elon Musk have been trying to shift that perception.
Yeah.
By, I mean, I'm not saying that he has become red-pilled because of that, but the Cybertruck and shit like that is not pitching towards liberals. It's pitching towards like sickos who love like fucked up, big, evil-looking trucks. But the main install base for electric vehicles is still those people. Your average consumer is not really thinking about an EV as their next vehicle.
And we talk about this a lot on Down Around. Like, I mean, you mentioned it with AI, like how your dad finally was like, this AI thing, is that going to disrupt your job because it got introduced to Microsoft Office? Like, is that tier of person, my mom's the same, like she wouldn't even really consider an EV. Like she would, just because, not because like she hates the environment or whatever. Just like, I have to do what? Like, what? No, EV, too complicated.
Yeah, get something installed in my house.
Like, it's not the thing I know, which is filling up my car with petrol, which I've been doing my entire life.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's before you... I mean, obviously, there are issues that people think about with, like, range anxiety, where it's like, what if I run out of power? Mm. You know, I have to sit at a charging station for 20 minutes when I'm going up the coast.
Mm.
Like, don't want to be doing that. Mm. What if I forgot to charge it? Like, there's all those issues. But before you even arrive at the objections, it's like... I have not even thought about this. I just like going to the petrol station once or twice a week, depending on how much I drive and filling up my car.
And to be perfectly honest, my most recent car, I never fully worked out the infotainment system. It seems a bit confusing.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Yeah, exactly. I can't figure it out. CarPlay doesn't work very well.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Like there's a knob and I just don't know how to make it work. Just can you please pair my phone again? Son, my phone isn't connecting to my car again. Can you fix that next time you come around?
Yeah, there's just a huge gap in terms of knowledge and
to be fair, I think it's reasonable with EVs. Like, I get it. I don't have an EV. I bought a car very recently. It wasn't an EV just because, I mean, A, we don't have the charging infrastructure in Sydney yet to really justify it. And even though the car I was buying was like a second car that's not going to do that much, it is still annoying. Something I don't think about right now is how much petrol does my car have? Like, how much charge does my friggin' car have? Like, I just don't think about it because I don't need to, because worst case scenario, I go to a petrol station for 5 minutes, fine. Like, it doesn't disrupt my day. Just the idea of being like, oh shit, like, every time I come home, got to plug it in to charge, you know, and just be aware, just something I have to be aware of, you know, I need to stay on top of how much charge does my car have? And like then factor that in when I want to use it and not use it. Like, can I drive over to a mate's house or whatever and stay overnight there? And I mean, I haven't stayed overnight at a mate's house for a while, to be perfectly frank. But you know what I mean? Going on holidays, obviously, it's going to be annoying if you're going to take it on holidays. You have to start thinking, it's now another factor in your holiday is charging it. You know, when was the last time I charged it? If I haven't, this, like, it's just a whole other thing. And I'm someone who fucking is trying to build a smart home, for God's sake, but I just don't really
want it. That was the aspect you didn't want to deal with. Yeah, and I think that's like the case for a lot of people. So yeah, it's not hugely surprising that demand has leveled off now that like the early adopter class who are like tech forward, prestige oriented, they want to signal the fact that they're environmentally friendly and they've got the latest and greatest. I think like one of the big innovations that Tesla has brought is that it has brought in a whole class of people who are not just environmental but also just like love tech.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that wasn't always the case with electric vehicles for sure, not the early ones at least. But now you go through that, you need to penetrate with average people. And one of the ways that you make that happen is by making them more affordable. This comes back to the battery problem.
Yeah.
How do you make batteries that are efficient but also cheaper and work better, which is happening. There are advancements happening in there all the time.
Yeah.
Moving really quickly.
Well, and it's probably worth noting to get like a little deeper on batteries and Chinese EVs and whatnot. A lot of the Chinese EVs use an iron-based batteries, which don't have the range that the nickel-based batteries that Tesla and the, you know, Ford and whatnot use, but they're much cheaper. To the point where more recently, it seems like you can get pretty, you know, they have 150 kilometers, 200 kilometers of range, but you can make these cars, including the battery and everything, for like 20 grand Australian, or, you know, 13 grand American type thing we're talking about. BYD were talking about releasing a car in South America that was going to cost about $11,000 US because, you know, short range or whatever, but using this cheaper iron-based battery, and the other thing is, like, because the demand has dropped off, as we just talked about, for all those reasons, like, that kind of demand curve is flattening out. A lot of these battery manufacturers who produced all these batteries, assuming that there was going to be all this demand, have had to drop their prices. So battery prices have, like, massively dropped, which means that the price of EVs is going to drop, which, you know, we'll see what that does for demand, because all of a sudden in this lower end of the market, they're going to become more affordable.
Yeah. So there's that. And there's also every week you hear about some story about a manufacturer building like a solid state battery.
Yeah. Like, there was one of these kind of things that you hear, solid state batteries, you just hear about it.
You hear about it, like Toyota made an announcement in like July last year that they had had really promising results on like a sodium based battery, solid state battery, which would be basically far denser in its energy retention. So as a result, you could do 1,000 kilometers on one charge or something like that. I think that was the number that they were bandying around. But, you know, that was in July last year, and we haven't really heard a whole lot since. And a lot
about salt batteries.
Yeah, the sodium batteries. A lot of the like analysts of the sector were kind of like, wouldn't be surprised if they had made one that works, but have they made it economical? It's something that you could actually put in a car at scale in cost? Probably
can
not.
You produce 1 million a year or whatever, which is always kind of the issue with these things, with science and advancements in this technology, right? It's like, it's all well and good to kind of invent something. And, you know, you would assume that it'll eventually make it out there, but can
it'll
you produce
take,
it at scale?
It'll take a while to scale it. But yeah, that's basically the EV quandary at the moment. Demand issues, a little bit of like a revenue crunch for companies like Tesla as they try to bring prices down to scale up to beat companies like BYD, who are trying to expand globally at a super fast clip, super vertically integrated, more affordable, depending on what model and whatever you're getting. I was saying this before, it's kind of like a fun comparison because we talked quite a bit on Dan around the idea that markets like China have this idea on the software side of like the Everything app, where everything you do happens inside one app. Like you've got WeChat or whatever and you fucking pay your car insurance, you message your friends, you run your business, you do it all through the one app. And they've never been able to get that off the ground in the US or in Western markets. But conversely, when it comes to hardware companies, American firms are kind of like Apple and they say, all right, the iPhone has got three models and each of those models has three colors. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you can get. Or like, Tesla. You've got the Model S, you've got the Model X, you've got the Model Y, and now you've got the Cybertruck.
Yeah.
That's it. Whereas BYD, if you look at their range, they've got, like 30 different
EVs. Yeah.
30 EVs.
And like 80 friggin', if you, all the plug-in hybrids and all that. Whatnot.
Yeah, all targeted to like minute parts of the sector. And you also see that in, you know, their smartphones with Samsung.
Yeah.
Yes, they've got the Galaxy. They've got like their flagship phone, but they also have like a billion other phones.
Yeah, yeah.
For all different sort of different purposes. But it's kind of interesting that it's sort of inverted hardware, software as to like the range of what's on offer.
Yeah, yeah.
And their philosophy.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the EV space, it's all, so China, again, much like America, had all of these incentives. And like to that point, a couple of years ago, there were more than 500 Chinese EV companies like building cars. That's reduced significantly now. It's down to like 80 or 90 or whatnot. And of those 80 or 90, most of them aren't at capacity. Because this is always one of the issues with Tesla was that like demand was greater than supply and they couldn't make these things fast enough. Now that's less of an issue because demand has dropped off. But yeah, in China, like a lot of these companies, a lot of these other car companies are going to go bankrupt or turn into JVs and whatnot. And you see that happening everywhere. It's obviously not just China. And I should say, 120 years ago, this was the same was true of the combustion. Like when the combustion engine was invented, there were something like 500 American car companies that all were just like, oh, cool, I can do that. Like, let's make a car company. And, you know, it consolidates over time. But big players in America and both Europe, and we saw some kind of, well, I wouldn't say funny stuff, but one thing that happened, you know, we talk about SPACs a lot, but many of them who hadn't actually made a car yet went public via SPACs and people got on board because they were like, hell yeah, EVs are going to be the future. I want to get invested. So just checking in on a few of them. Obviously, the big one being Nikola. Again, we've spoken about Nikola. Insanely cringe that like you have a company called Tesla and they went with the name Nikola and they were supposed to do trucks. And as we've mentioned before, they got in a lot of strife. Oh, their founder is in jail. We'll start with that because they misrepresented where they were at, including, for example, in a demo video of the Nikola truck that they filmed. Like, here is our truck. Here it is in motion. Off it goes. It was didn't have an engine in it. It was rolling down a hill, and they just straightened the footage to make it look like it was driving straight. I mean, that's obviously peak. That's like... That's genius. Like, if you're going to commit fraud...
That's as good as it gets.
Absolutely. Just straighten that up and...
We're good to go. We're golden, folks.
I would have liked them to give it a slight incline personally, but I'm sure. But like, let's look at other ones. The big story in the last kind of few weeks is Fitzka. Terrible name. I'm sorry. Like, it reminds me too much of like Finska, the wedding game.
Yeah, where you throw the peg at the other wooden pegs, like that weird Norwegian.
Yeah. I don't know if it's supposed to invoke that. Maybe it is supposed to evoke that. But they are a company, now headline, that lost 85% of their share market value due to a YouTube review. If you have a look at the chart of their stock price, it was on the way down significantly before this YouTube review. But they produced a car which looks pretty cool, cool EV. And the review by, what's his MKBHD.
Yeah, Marques Brownlee, who is like one of the big...
Reviewers. I have seen a few of his reviews. He's pretty good.
They're good. But he's got like a trillion followers on YouTube because he does tech reviews. But he basically... And normally this guy is not the type to sort of like do a takedown.
No, he's not. He's not doing soy faces on, you know,
and being like worst car ever.
And actually, he is a good reviewer. And like I have watched him a few times because it's him and like a camera. Yeah. He's not doing like full produced things, and they're quite in depth. And as I mentioned to you earlier at the pub, I quite like it because he does the golf bag tests, like where he just sees if the boot fits in a set of golf clubs, which, you know.
That's a big criteria for you. Yeah,
that is a big criteria for me. But he just did a review of this car, and it was a very balanced review, but he was just like, I wouldn't drive this thing if you gave it to me for free because, for example, and this is what happens with these EVs that are computers. We just said, like, what's an EV? It's like a battery and a computer, basically.
Battery and a computer and some wheels, yeah.
And so he's, for example... When he's trying to unlock it with just the key fob, sometimes it takes 3, 4, 5 times to just unlock the doors because it's just not responding. And, you know, certain buttons just like do things that a kind of shitty computer would do where it's just unresponsive. Pressing button doesn't happen, lag, blah, blah, blah. And just for those reasons as well, it's like, had a bunch of weird little things. Watch the review. It's a very balanced review.
Yeah, but he was basically like, it's the worst car I've ever driven.
It's the worst car I've ever driven. I wouldn't drive this if you gave it to me for free because it's too frustrating. Like Bluetooth wouldn't connect, and then like 15 minutes into the drive, because he had headphones on, because he's like, well, you know, I'm going to have to put headphones on because I can't listen to my music. It would just like connect and then disconnect 30 seconds later and that kind of gear. You know, tech stuff, like cheap tech stuff.
Cheap, shitty tech stuff, but it's also, yeah, like a piece of metal that's hurtling at 100 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, that costs $100,000. But, you know, a lot of these companies who got a lot of initial funding and then went public. This is the problem with SPACs. Like, you just shouldn't be going public this early.
No, not when you just don't have a product.
Yeah.
This is one of the big critiques of a lot of SPAC stuff is that it's basically like turning your company into like a Kickstarter project or something.
Yeah.
Where you just absorb a lot of this capital before anything has happened.
Yeah.
When, you know, your average public company is normally somewhat battle tested.
Yeah.
And you can at least open your books and show what you've been doing. Whereas this is kind of like, you like electric vehicles? Just bet on it. We can't show you one, but we're in a space that sounds cool.
Yeah, exactly. Quantum. There's a bunch of quantum public companies that obviously like, so pre-product, but anyway, whatever. That's SPACs again. Another episode. But that's kind of what's happening over in EV world. There's a lot of consolidation coming. There's a lot of bankruptcy coming. I like Rivian. I like Lucid. They're losing shitloads of money. We talked about Rivian in the Apple episode.
Yeah. But, I mean, after actually we did the episode, Rivian announced its latest car or its latest range of cars. And they look really cool.
Yeah.
Like, they're, aesthetically, they've gone for like that boxy look, which they're clearly deliberately aped of like a Japanese import in the 80s or 90s, where it's got like a real kind of like
an old 3 Series BMW from the 80s kind
like
of vibe.
Like big, strong frame with like hard lines.
Mm. I think the little round headlights are coming back in as well in cars.
Yeah, I thought that part looked kind of fucked up. But
no, well, I've seen a few other cars doing it as well now, like very niche, smaller ones doing, you know, headlights have gotten insanely huge, square, rectangle things with like lines and animations and whatnot, and blinkers like go like on the back of the car. They're like literally a line, like a flat line across.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen a few going like, you know,
stacked circles.
It's a dialectic, you know. Yeah, instead just going little kind of cute little circles, like an old Citroen from the 70s or whatever.
This signals the end of woke. Woke is over because we're going back to little circle headlights.
I like the little circle headlights. My next car will have little circle headlights, I hope.
Don't care if it's an EV.
No.
It can be petrol, I don't care.
No. It's got to have CarPlay and little circle headlights. Those are my two criteria.
It can be bloody powered by a hand crank or like Flintstone style, as long as it's got those two things.
Yeah, I'm in.
Hell yeah.
If you're listening to this, did you know there's another world out there where you get a second episode of Down Round a week?
Yep, it's called Down Round Premium.
That's right, and there's no interruptions.
No interruptions, no ads, 2 episodes a week, including the free one you're getting right now, plus another one.
Yep, $7 a month, not a week, a month, downround.net. Downround.net, instant access to the whole back catalogue as well. You've got so much to catch up on.
There's so much. Get around it.
Mmm.